Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good Saturday morning of U.S. Open weekend. It's Hardy here with you on the Sports Hub Golf Club. 7:03, another beautiful day. If you are one of the many fathers who are trying to get out on the course this weekend for Father's Day, here's what happens. I did this back, in the day. I would present my father with a Father's Day gift of a round of golf, of which, of course, I was already invited. What is different now, and this is so much different than I remember it as a kid, Father's Day doesn't necessarily or hardly ever belongs to the fathers. Whether you've got dance recitals, the ballet recitals, that's really more of a Saturday night before Father's Day thing, but that's still a thing. It's still a thing on Father's Day Sunday. Baseball tournaments, lacrosse jamborees, whatever it is you have going on tomorrow, today might be your day to get out. So if you get a chance to get out, wonderful. For men and women, I have two friends of mine who are going out today who happen to be women told me the same thing. They were, they have all these plans tomorrow, not having to do with Father's Day, but all this other stuff that takes place. So, okay, whatever. Today's the good weather day anyway. So if you're going to get out today, enjoy that. Let's talk U.S. Open, as sitting alone atop the leaderboard is one Gary Woodland. At first glance, you might think you were looking at Brooks Koepka up there on the screen because, well, I would almost put them in the whole Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth type of doppelganger category. I defy anybody to overlay a silhouette swing of Jordan Spieth and Justin Rose and tell me who is who. You know, they grew up playing golf together. They have very similar styles. Gary Woodland and Brooks Koepka, I haven't done a side-by-side swing comparison, but they are similar in build. They're similar in their games. Whereas Brooks Koepka, of course, you're defending U.S. Open champion, back-to-back U.S. Open champion, trying for the three-peat, is very long off the tee. Gary Woodland, much the same way. And before we get started on his round, I just got to say how awesome it is to be able to sit down on Thursday night and Friday night and watch primetime golf. I talked about this on Zolak and Bertrand yesterday, just as an opening thought after our NBA and hockey talk. I said, you know what? The U.S. Open should be played on the West Coast every year. This is fantastic. I mean, we've got the Masters, which is still the tournament. We've got the PGA Championship. Leave that over on the East Coast somewhere. Make that an up and down the East Coast or a Midwest tournament, whatever. Leave the U.S. Open somewhere out west so that we have our early morning British Open golf viewing in July. And in June, we can kick back on a Thursday night, Friday night. Tee times today are going to be a little bit different after the cut. But still, I think we're going to get golf well into the evening here once again. It was fantastic. I sat there and watched golf last night, and I got a chance to see Gary Woodland, who teed off on 10 yesterday, come down the stretch. And, I mean, honestly, if this guy ends up winning this thing, well-deserved for a number of reasons. Let me start off by just telling you about his round. Gary Woodland, so far, is 9 under par for the tournament. He is 2 strokes ahead of Justin Rose. Woodland opened up with a 68 on Thursday. He followed that up with a 65 yesterday. As I said, he teed off on 10, made a couple of pars. He made a birdie at 12, which is a par 3. And anytime these guys can put a 2 down on the scorecard, they're thrilled. All right? Made another birdie on 16. So he makes the turn 2 under. He starts his second 9, which again, he teed off on 10. So his second 9, he goes to the first hole, hole number 1. He goes birdie, 3 straight pars in the par 4s, makes another 2 on the par 3 5th, follows that up with a birdie on the par 5 6th, 2 more pars before making what to me was so far the best shot I've seen at this tournament. Of course, there have been some lucky eagles that have gone in from way out in the fairway and some very nice short game shots. But to me, what Gary Woodland did yesterday on his last full swing of his second round was something special. So the 9th hole is a par 4. To get it to the bunker, he had to fly it, I believe, 297. He flew it over the bunker with his tee shot. So once again, reminds you of Brooks Koepka and the way he drives the ball off the tee. Just ginormous. However, the ball rolls up and into a divot. He's got 200 plus left to the hole. I mean, it's a monster par 4 on number 9. So what does one do? Now, again, don't ask me. Later on in the show when we get our lesson, today we're getting a bunker lesson, as a matter of fact, from Stephen Daly, the head pro at the Cape Club of Sharon. So we're not going to talk about how to hit out of a divot. But, man, do I have no idea how to hit out of a divot, especially when you got a bit of a downhill lie and the green is down the hill and you've got to stop this thing because you know what the greens are like at the U.S. Open and you've got to do something special. He somehow managed to get the club face onto that ball and power through that, as I believe it was Faxon said yesterday, just really had to muscle that thing out of that divot to get it right up pin high and then drains a birdie putt to make a 3 on his final hole of the day. 65 for Gary Woodland. 6 birdies, no bogeys, the rest pars. It's a par 71 set up there at Pebble Beach for the U.S. Open. And that puts him at 9 under for the tournament. He's a very deserving leader. Now, there's a lot of other players to get to, and there's also something that I want to talk about here this morning, which we'll wait for in a few minutes, and it has to do with the notion that the U.S. Open is set up, I guess, as more of like a trick golf course. Apparently this is one of Maz's things, and I've heard other people say this, that the U.S. Open is set up too difficult and that you get a bunch of weird things happening and weird winners of it, guys who are just trying to keep it in the fairway, play pedestrian golf, not make mistakes, and it leads and it lends itself to a less exciting type of golf tournament. Gary Woodland did a lot to dispel that notion yesterday because the way he drives the ball and with the length that he possesses and his ability to really tame that golf course. So we'll get to more of that here in a few minutes. Let's talk about some other people here on the leaderboard as we look at Justin Rose. He could be one of those guys that you say, well, it's not very exciting to watch. But Justin, he shot his 65 in the opening round and followed that up with a 1 under par 70 yesterday. And in his second round, he had some trouble. He made bogeys at both 1 and 4, did find some birdie opportunities out there, which, excuse me, he did on the par 5 18th, and that was giving guys issues yesterday. But a solid second round for Justin Rose, probably not what he wanted to follow up that 65. It's good enough, though, to give him sole possession of second place, 2 strokes off the lead. The one guy who, surprised me yesterday was Louis Oosthuizen, who shot a 66 in the first round. I fully expected him to fall off the map. He did not. He, like Justin Rose, shot a 1-under par 70 yesterday. So he's still there. He's 6-under par. He's 3 strokes off the lead. This is where it starts to get into, all right, do these guys really have a chance territory? A couple of them do. I think a few of them don't. When you start to get more than 4 strokes off the lead after 36 holes, now we get into a conversation of, well, it's really just kind of academic at this point. First and foremost, Rory McIlroy, who shot a 68 and a 69, probably the most consistent of these guys on the first page of the leaderboard. I would say he has the best chance. And we all saw what he did at the Canadian Open last weekend, where he put on an absolute clinic and was looking at maybe going for a course record. He had what I would consider to be a blow-up hole on 14 yesterday. Again, the ability to watch this last night was fantastic. Primetime U.S. Open viewing. Rory McIlroy has a nice round going, and he is absolutely in position to take a share of the lead, maybe even sole possession of the lead. 2 birdies on the front, no bogeys. He makes a birdie on 11. He gets to number 13, par 4. He makes his first bogey of the day. That's okay. He's still 2-under for his round, and he's still shot the 68 on Thursday, so he's in great position. All right, a bogey on 13. No big deal. Walk it off. You got a par 5 coming up next. What does he do on the par 5 14th? Like many guys yesterday, he's going to lay up with his second shot. The green was not lending itself to a long second shot approach. Rory decided to lay up and leave himself a wedge into the green. He spun the wedge off of the false front, for lack of a better term. It's not even so much a false front as it just the front of the green just falls away from a variety of places. They did a great featurette yesterday on that green and dropped 5 or 6 golf balls, the Fox broadcast crew did, and they all run off and essentially run down to the same portion in the front third of that green and just roll right off the green and back down into the fairway. Again, not the worst thing in the world for Rory. Okay, you laid up, you missed your approach, and you didn't miss it, but it rolled back off the green. Now you got to get it up and down to save par. He tries to hit a flop over the bunker and puts it in the bunker instead. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I couldn't believe he was having that much difficulty from 100 yards and in. It kind of speaks to what we did last week lesson-wise on this show, where the best players in the world never seem to have problems here. But on a course that is set up like Pebble Beach is for the U.S. Open and the difficulty of that pin placement, yeah, of course. Of course you're having trouble. How could you not have trouble? Except he's Rory McIlroy, and you wouldn't expect that. When it was all said and done, he made a double bogey on 14. So now he's given back all the strokes to par that he had managed to get in the first 11 holes. He follows it up with birdies on 15 and 16, both par fours, both difficult birdies. He makes them both. He pars in for a 69. So that puts Rory, after his opening round, 68 with a 69, it puts him in a tie for fourth place, 5-under par, 4 strokes off the lead. I give Rory a legitimate chance at making a move on not only Gary Woodland this weekend, but Justin Rose if he goes low again, and maybe Louis Oosthuizen. Some of the other guys back here, Chesson Hadley, he's a nice story. He's also at 4-under par. I don't know if I expect the likes of Chesson Hadley or Che Ryu to be there, who's also at 4-under par, on the final 36 holes of the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Same goes for Matt Kuchar, who's also at 4-under par. Very consistent, a pair of 69s for Matt Kuchar to get himself to 4-under par. I just don't know if he's the guy to really put the hammer down and apply pressure to the guys in front of him for the remainder of this tournament. The one guy who's in there who you really definitely have to keep your eye on, also at 4-under par, 5 strokes off the lead, Brooks Koepka, who also shot a pair of 69s. And if Brooks Koepka can have a little better luck with the putter, he's going to be the one guy, I would say, out of all those players within five strokes of the lead after 36 holes to keep your eye on for the rest of the weekend. I want to talk a little bit more about the guys who have won this in the past and see if we can dispel the notion that this is kind of a boring golf tournament. I don't know. We'll see if we can figure it out together. And like I said, we'll also have our lesson this morning from Stephen Daly, who is the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. Going to be talking about bunker play here this morning. It's all coming up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Back now on the Sports Hub Golf Club, U.S. Open weekend. I forgot. There was a story that you kind of chuckle at first until you find out that some people got really hurt in this thing. And why are you chuckling then, Hardy? I don't know. I guess the headline, runaway golf cart injures U.S. Open spectators. Mark Schlabach, an ESPN writer. A runaway golf cart injured five people near the 16th hole at Pebble Beach Golf Links during the second round of the 119th U.S. Open on Friday, according to the California Highway Patrol. Now, again, chuckle, ha-ha, I saw a picture of it. These aren't golf carts. What was involved here looks like to be one of the transport carts. Mostly maintenance guys use, but you'll see guys out on the golf course hauling around, you know, water coolers, supplies. These are more heavy duty, and the heavy being the operative word there, larger vehicles. What happened was a vendor, stop laughing, it's not funny. A vendor drove the cart loaded with boxes to a concession stand near the 16th hole. He parked it. When he climbed out, a box fell on the accelerator and caused the cart to move. Witnesses said the unoccupied cart drove in large circles until someone jumped on it and knocked the box off. It was like Batman. Unfortunately, five people were injured, including one with a broken arm, one with a spinal injury, and another with minor injuries. One person was transported to the hospital of the Monterey Peninsula. Bet that's a nice place. With the minor injuries were taken to somewhere else. The people who were injured ranged in age from 25 to 82. Oh, all right. Well, that's not so funny anymore. Here's one of the witnesses. We were standing in the concession line of the 16th hole when all of a sudden there was a runaway cart and one guy running after it, then a bunch of people running after it. It was actually coming straight for the concession line, and then it turned just on its own, and it didn't stop. It started driving in circles. It ran over like five people. So if you're lamenting the fact that you couldn't be at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach this weekend, at least, you know, you didn't get hit by a runaway maintenance cart loaded down with supplies and end up with a broken arm or a spinal injury. That happened yesterday at Pebble Beach. All right, moving on. To this whole theory that I heard put out there, and this is not a straw man argument. Apparently, this is one of Tony Maz's favorites, and it's something that he is not alone, maybe alone in his eloquence and his passion for the subject, but I have heard other people lament the fact that the U.S. Open setups are too tricky and that sometimes they're just plain bad. When you go back to Chambers Bay in Washington in 2015. I mean, the course was so dried out and the greens were garbage, and other setups in the past, be it at Bethpage Black 10 years ago, Pinehurst, Winged Foot, Oakmont, just too tough. The rough too thick. You just, you know, this isn't golf. You know, this isn't what these guys are used to week in and week out. How can you possibly expect them to compete? And more importantly, and more to the point of some of these people who don't like it, how can you expect a golfer that we find entertaining to watch actually succeed on a setup like that? Instead, it's just going to favor the guys who hit short irons, keep it in the fairway, you know, or hit short clubs, I should say, off the tee. You know, a lot of two iron and three irons off the tee. just keep the ball in play. Don't take any chances. It doesn't allow for any creativity because you can't go into the rough, blah, 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 blah. All right, you can make a case for that. Until you look at the people who have actually won the U.S. Open going back for the last 20 years. I mean, I'll start with the back-to-back champion of the U.S. Open, Brooks Koepka. I mean, Brooks Koepka is not a play-it-safe type of golfer. He's really, really long off the tee. The fact that he hits his driver straight, I don't want to hold that against him when it comes to saying whether or not he's an enjoyable guy to watch. I actually think Brooks Koepka, for whatever personality he's lacking, has a pretty enjoyable game. And that's certainly the case for the guy who won it 3 years ago when it was at Oakmont, Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson is a creative player, and he's capable of driving the ball into the rough and digging it out. He's strong enough and has enough club head speed to make shots that ordinary mortal humans can't make. Now, here you get into a stretch where I understand what people are talking about. And we'll start with Jordan Spieth, who won that tournament at Chambers Bay. And that was, you'll remember the course, out in University Place, Washington, where the greens just, they look like crap. Apparently, but more importantly, they were rolling like crap, just bumpy. And they, you know, it just didn't look like the best that golf had to offer. What I do like about setups like that is a lot of times it reminds you of what you and I end up playing on a fairly regular basis. Less than perfect conditions, much less than perfect conditions. How do these guys handle conditions that essentially do the same thing to their game that these conditions do to our game? Now, granted, it's on a much larger scale. It's a longer layout. The greens are faster, but still. Chances are, if you're playing this weekend, you're going to end up playing at a place that is less than perfect. And these guys get a taste of what most golfers, when I say most, I mean 99.99% of the people who play this game, have to deal with on a regular basis. But again, Jordan Spieth, not the most exciting player. Ditto for the three guys who won before him, Martin Kaymer at Pinehurst, Justin Rose at Marion, and Webb Simpson at Olympic. Oof, Webb Simpson. I'm glad he's come back. I'm glad he's found his game again. But this is not an exciting guy to watch. But then when you go back to when the U.S. Open was at Congressional back in 2011, Rory McIlroy, your winner. Graham McDowell the year before that. And then you start looking at some of the guys who won in the first decade of the century, Tiger Woods, Angel Cabrera. Also your Masters champion, I believe the year after. Retief Goosen, who was on a run of U.S. Opens and British Opens. Jim Furyk was always a fun guy to watch, all the way back to Tiger Woods at Bethpage Black and of course, his amazing victory at Pebble Beach in 2000. Tiger Woods wasn't playing fairways and greens. Tiger Woods lapped the field that year, 12 under par, 15 strokes better than his next closest competitor. I mean, again, just going back a short history, 19, 20 years or so, you can say that the U.S. Open favors boring players. Fine. But when your list of winners includes Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, Angel Cabrera, and Jim Furyk, I think that does a little something to your argument. It pokes holes in your argument that only the quote-unquote boring guys can win at the U.S. Open. There was one other Tiger Woods story. I just mentioned his amazing victory in 2000, which will stand up as maybe the most dominant victory in the modern-day U.S. Open or at modern-day major championship golf. 12 under par on that up. His next closest competitor was three over. It was a 15-stroke win at Pebble Beach back in 2000. But there was a story earlier this week, and I had never heard this before. Christopher Powers wrote this in Golf World. Here's your headline. U.S. Open 2019. Never forget that Tiger Woods almost ran out of golf balls during his 2000 Pebble Beach romp. What? What? Okay. A little background. Tiger Woods had started playing a new ball that week, the Nike Tour Accuracy. Okay? And believe me, there have been articles written on this book, and Phil Mickelson was dogging Tiger, saying he was playing in inferior equipment and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so he starts playing this new golf ball. He finishes his round on Saturday late. He hadn't putted well that day, so he took some balls out of his golf bag and went to his hotel room to putt on the carpet. This is Tiger, a quote from him. I normally take 9 to 12 balls to the course, but I only had 7 left. I probably scuffed up a couple and gave them to the kids. I left the 3 balls on the carpet. Now I've got only 4 balls when I get to the course. So they start playing, and he gets into his round. On the 18th hole, he put his drive into the water. At this point, he's only got 1 ball left in the bag. However, Tiger didn't know at this time because he had, I mean, he's explaining all this in the aftermath. It's like, oh, I took some balls out and I gave a couple away to the kids, blah, 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 blah. But at the time, I still thought we had golf balls in the bag. His caddy at the time, Stevie Williams, knew. So he tried to get Tiger to hit an iron off the tee. He said, I want you to hit an iron. Just get into play. Tiger said, I went with the driver. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm lapping the field at the U.S. Open. So what if I put one in the water? Give me another one. Tiger said, I would have been disqualified with no golf balls. If you run out of balls, you're out. Now, this is what we all think is the case. At least it's that's what I thought was the case. And for no other reason, you know, I've seen Tin Cup, right? Oh, you put this one in the water and you're disqualified. Technically, this is according to the rules and as they were in 2000, maybe even now. Who knows? Do you know what the actual rule is for running out of golf balls? Here's what Golf World says. Technically, Woods could have borrowed a ball from a competitor, provided it was the exact same brand and type. Now, this would have been a problem because, like I said, he's playing this new Nike Tour Accuracy that nobody else was playing. He could have bought some balls from the golf shop. Again, a problem. And they probably weren't stocking those yet. Or, this is where he would have gotten away with it, sent someone to his hotel room to get more. He would have received a 2-stroke penalty for undue delay, but since he won the tournament by 15 strokes, it wouldn't have mattered. And it didn't matter anyway because he put his second tee shot in play. He made a bogey, and he still ended up winning the U.S. Open. But the fact that he was down to his last golf ball, no. That part of the story I never knew before. All right, we'll step aside. Mike O'Brien has our headlines here, and when we come back, Stephen Daly, the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon, is going to give us our lesson for the day. It's a bunker lesson, something we could all use help with. That'll be coming up next.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
Once again, here on the Sports Hub Golf Club, it's time to get a tip from Stephen Daly, the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. And today we're going to be talking about bunker play. Now, bunker play is also a pretty big subject, whether we're talking about fairway bunkers, greenside bunkers. So, Stephen, I'll let you start us off here. When I say bunker play, I'm coming to you for help with my bunker play. What do you tell me?
I would say,
keep it out of the bunkers.
Yeah, precisely. And me included, because that's the worst part of my game. But I do have some tips that can help us get out and hopefully and get under 3 shots from the bunker.
Okay. And I'm not asking you to turn me into one of these, you know, lunatics who roots for the ball to get into the bunker, because that's where I know I'm going to have a consistent line. I don't know what the terrain is going to be like around the green. Like, keep me out of the bunkers for the most part. And I can get out, but I really don't have any idea of like how to control the distance or really how to account for the alignment on a bunker shot. So what do you tell people when you're doing a bunker lesson?
Yeah, so if we're speaking about greenside bunker play, you know, you're really looking, obviously, to get it out in one shot, but also trying to get it out to the safest area, too. So I really do like to start by digging my feet in a little bit and opening my stance, aiming a little bit left of my target. And
now, why is that? Is that because you're going to take, you know, like a shallower attack on the ball than a normal shot, and you're trying to match the depth of the bottoms of your feet with where the club is going to bottom out?
Exactly, precisely. So I'm going to open the club face a little bit, so that's why I aim to the left. And then you open up the face so you're actually pointing straight at the target. And your feet dig in so that the club will naturally swing to the depth of your toes, if that makes sense. Yep. And you're essentially only displacing the sand, not really hitting the ball on a bunker shot. So that should be one of the key things.
You see, I know just enough about this game to be a little bit dangerous, and I know this is one of the few shots where you are not making ball contact first. You're actually going in behind the ball, taking the sand, and removing a portion of the sand with the ball. So how much sand do you take? Where are you supposed to line up if you're opening up the club face? These are the problems that guys like me deal with when we do find ourselves in the bunker. So let's start with number one. How much sand do you take?
So one of the best tips that my dad, who taught me the game, ever told me was the size of your divot should be about a dollar bill size. So if you were to draw a dollar bill in the sand about the same size and you put the ball in the middle of that rectangle, that should be the entering and exit point of that divot.
And it doesn't matter how much, you know, what distance you're trying to get the ball to travel?
No, normally I like to dictate the distance by the speed and length of my swing.
Okay.
So, you know, like a 10-yard shot, if you're using like kind of a clock, right? So you might go like 3 to 6 or shoulder height to shoulder height or knee height to knee height, depending on the distance of the shot.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned opening up the club face, which in my mind is going to send the ball right of target more so than it normally would. How do you account for that when you're in the bunkers?
Right. So we'll set up a little left of the target, and then we'll open up the club face so that, say, you set a coin, like a quarter, on the club face of your wedge. That coin should never slide off the face. So it should be even more open than probably what you would normally think.
Okay. What is the biggest mistake people make in the bunkers?
Decelerating. So always, sometimes they'll swing it so far back that say, oh no, that might be too much, and then start slowing down, and then we know that one ends up on the lip of the bunker and rolling right back in. So I'd say you'd really want to maybe take a little bit shorter of a swing, but also like that club is accelerating.
The dreaded decel. It spells doom in virtually every golf shot. So make sure you accelerate through the ball. We're going to take a dollar bill size length of sand out, regardless of how far away we are, but we're going to control the distance with the length of our swing.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Fairway bunkers. Anything else we need to be thinking about? This is where, obviously, you could be taking something other than a sand wedge in there with you. You've left yourself 200 yards out, but it's a shallow fairway bunker. There's no reason why I can't take a hybrid in here and try and actually still get on the green with this shot. What should I be thinking about?
Yeah, no, definitely. As long as it's a shallow bunker, you know, this is a situation where you can be pretty aggressive just because the lie is usually sitting up pretty nice. What I like to do is really just think about, staying in your posture. The moment that you change your posture, whether you dip down a little bit or stand up a little bit, is when you change contact. You know, so hitting out of a fairway bunker, obviously, the margin for error is much smaller than out of the fairway or off the tee. So contact is key, and just try to maintain that posture to develop a good strike.
What's the best way or the best thing to be thinking about when you're practicing this? And again, when you're on the course and you're actually playing, you shouldn't be thinking about anything. But in practice scenarios, for me, if I'm trying to maintain posture and maintain, you know, just height is really how I think of it. I think about not moving my head at all, up, down, left, right. Is that a good thing to try to work on, especially when you're talking about fairway bunker shots?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good way to practice just in general, because we could all do a little less moving in our swing, you know, whether it's laterally or vertically. Staying centered and staying over the ball and maintaining that posture will be good for your game all the way around and definitely in the fairway bunkers.
My final question for you. This is Stephen Daly, by the way. He's a head professional here at the Cape Club of Sharon. Bunker play is probably the one area of the game that gets the least amount of practice because people don't have access to bunkers where they can go and practice. Is there any other way to practice bunker shots without actually getting into the sand somewhere?
You know, I think if you could find a patch of really deep, heavy rough, you could practice in that, and not even with a ball, just as much as practicing your stance and your alignment, and opening the club face and seeing how the club kind of will swing through that rough, and certainly, like we spoke about, the decelerating, you know. The rough is going to grab that club just like the sand would. So practicing, you know, having that a nice acceleration through the rough is going to, benefit you as well.
Okay. Stephen Daly, head professional, Cape Club of Sharon. Thanks for the time. As always, Stephen, good stuff.
Always nice to see you.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Back to wrap things up here on the Sports Hub Golf Club, U.S. Open weekend. Gary Woodland is your leader. He is alone on top of the leaderboard right now, 9 under par after rounds of 68 and a 65 yesterday that culminated with a birdie on his 18th hole of the day, number 9 at Pebble Beach. And if you were watching some primetime golf like I was last night, you got a chance to see just a fantastic approach shot that he had to hit out of the divot and then made not a gutsy putt, but a good putt. A solid way to finish off a solid round of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 birdies, no bogeys, a 65 on the par 71 Pebble Beach layout to give himself sole possession of the lead, 2 strokes better than Justin Rose, 3 strokes ahead of Louis Oosthuizen. Aaron Wise is the only player currently 4 strokes off the lead. And then you got a pack of players at 5 strokes back. I think a few of whom could make a run this weekend. I take that back. Rory McIlroy is also 4 strokes off the lead. So he and Aaron Wise are the two players who are within 4. I think within 5 is a reasonable number for us to talk about here. And I'm not saying that, you know, some of these other guys who are, I stop short of within 10 strokes of the lead. Okay, so yeah, I'm not going to consider Daniel Berger or Rory Sabatini as much as I would like to see, you know, Billy Horschel or Billy Hurley win this thing. I don't think they're going to. But, you know, look, does Phil Mickelson sitting at 1 under par for the tournament, 8 strokes off the lead, does he have a chance? Sure. What about Tiger? Tiger's only 1 stroke back of Phil. Tiger's 9 strokes off lead. Does he have a chance? Sure. Not really, but sure. Okay. If you want to open it up to that degree, I, you know, call me nuts, but I think guys who are within like 5, 6, 7 is pretty much where I top it out. And you've still got a nice group of players in there that you can watch this weekend. Dustin Johnson, he's at 2 under par. Okay. He's not out of it. Sergio Garcia, who after his 69 in the opening round said, I have no chance of winning this thing. I said for years Sergio was the best player who would never win a major championship, and I was happy for him. And he was the guy I rooted against for years until he had a chance to win the Masters. And when he did win the Masters, I was legitimately happy for him, you know? To finally break through, get that major championship. Such a good player, such a talent for so many years, but he is a strange cat. And if you were to tell me that he doesn't care about winning anymore ever since he won that one major, it'd be hard to disagree with you. Who else walks off the course after shooting a 2 under par 69 first round of the U.S. Open and says, I have no chance of winning this thing? Which is what he did. He had an amazing second shot into 18 yesterday. Not many guys were going for that green in 2. He did. He missed his eagle putt, but he finished strong. He finished, you know, with a birdie on 18 to shoot a 70 yesterday. He's only 6 strokes off the lead, but Sergio himself will tell you he's got no chance of winning it. Maybe he's playing reverse psychology with himself. Scott Piercy, you know, started off strong. He's showed some flashes here. He and John Rahm are both six strokes off the lead. Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson, all these guys still within striking distance. But, you know, I like to put the cap at five, within five. And within five, you've got Brooks Koepka, Matt Kuchar, Rory McIlroy. Plenty of guys to watch this weekend as we get into the second half of the U.S. Open starting later today.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.